WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moscoene in for Terry Gross. Bob Hoskins is one of the most versatile actors working today. His roles cover the gamut, a mobster in The Long Good Friday, a sweet-natured small-time hood in Mona Lisa, the hapless private eye Eddie Valiant in Who Framed Roger Rabbit, an overtly gay J. Edgar Hoover in Nixon, and many more. Whether in a leading role or playing a smaller part, Hoskins has the ability to completely inhabit a character, making him one of the best in the business. He's also a busy actor, and this summer appeared in Cousin Bet and will be seen in the upcoming The Live Virgin. Hoskins recently starred in a small black-and-white British film called 24/7. Set in Nottingham, a depressed working-class town in the English Midlands, he plays a boxing coach who worked with a group of local boys. It's a gritty story about young men on the dole, aimless outcasts with no future.
It's interesting to look at some of the films that have come out of England that have this sort of dark, working-class, gritty reality. Even something like The Full Monty, which was taken as a very funny film, but it's actually a film about people on the dole in England.
People.
And the forgotten people, exactly. Mm. And I wonder whether in England, filmmakers are trying to offer this alternative view of England, whether there's sort of a social war at work in England, and films are one way to understand it.
No, it's basically what it's come from. For when Maggie Thatcher came into power, as far as Maggie was concerned, like all arts and drama was left wing, and she wasn't
having
no
parts of
it. None of that, and she went out of her way to destroy it. And the only films that were made, if the women weren't wearing crinolines, the camera wouldn't work, you know. And now they've gone. The new government is not helping the film industry, but it's not standing in its way.
Mm-hmm.
And this voice, this culture that has been kept down for 20 years has suddenly found its voice. Like culture's like it's like grass. No matter how much concrete you're going to put on top of it, it will find its way through. And it's rare, and it's got a lot to say.
Hmm. Well, tell us a little bit about how you, where you came from and all that sort of stuff. I know you were born in, what, 1942, during World War II in England?
During World War II, yeah. Well, I was born in Bury St. Edmunds. That's in Suffolk, up in, sort of, you know, on the bum of the pig.
Mm-hmm.
And I was only 2 weeks old, and they sent my mum back to the middle of the air raid.
To have you, right?
Yeah, I spent the first 3 years of my life under a kitchen table. And
do you have any memory of that at all?
Vaguely. You know, it wasn't... I wasn't scared or anything because my parents sort of were pretty solid. And I sort of, my playground when I was a kid was a bomb site.
Hmm.
It was a big hole with bricks in it, you know. And there weren't no slides or swings in those days. But, I sort of grew up in London and probably grew up in one of the best ages that England or most countries will ever see because we... We'd won the war.
Right.
You know, we had no money. We were all on rations. But suddenly, there was health. There was healthcare. There was a good sort of. There was plenty of work. It was, you know, it was going. It was booming, and suddenly they stopped the call up. Men weren't called into the army anymore. So all of a sudden, for the first time ever, there were 18-year-old boys with money in their pockets walking the streets. You know, and driving cars, and then in came rock and roll. You know, well, so and the only thing the only worry anybody ever had was whether your girlfriend got pregnant, and then they brought out the pill. Well, talk about opening Pandora's box. They threw the lid away. You know what I mean?
So it was perfect.
Oh, it was a wonderful time. Yeah, Dennis Hopper lived in London in those times.
Yeah.
Now Dennis knows where to find a good time.
Yeah. And you tagged along.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Well, what kind of a family did you grow up in? I mean, what did your dad do? What did your mom do?
My dad was a clerk.
A clerk, yeah.
Yeah, and he, and my mum was she was a cook,
mm-hmm.
and then she was a nursery nurse. And it was pretty working class.
Wow. Happy family?
Very happy. I hated school. I was always very popular with the kids, but the teachers couldn't stand me.
Why?
I think I was a bit of a handful, you know.
Yeah.
Because my mum and dad both came from big families, and they wanted a big family, but until they had me, and that was the end of that. And I was the only child. I always wanted a little sister called Sophie, but yeah. She never came.
But you were an only child.
Yeah.
Oh. So you were a troublemaker in school?
Well, I could just see that. I was saucy. I could just see the funny side of things, you know what I mean? And they took themselves very seriously. Pomposity doesn't work with me.
So they were they were glad to see you go at the age of 15,
oh,
I
yes.
understand.
Oh, yeah. Well, I went back to school. I'd left school. I was working. And I bought myself a suit and all the things. I strutted back into school to see the chaps. And the headmaster was standing at the top of the stairs. He said, "Take one more step, Hoskins, and I'll call the police." So, nice to see you too.
What about now? Do they claim you as one of their own now that you're a well-known actor? Well, in Bob Hoskins' day at your school?
Well, not really. The only person that ever really meant anything to me there was a big Welshman called Mr. Jones, Dyer Jones. And he interested me in literature. I started to read, you know, and he turned me into a total bookworm. And I still see him now occasionally in the pub. You know, he's retired now. He likes a bevy. And I'll go and have a bevy with him now again.
Huh. And a bevy for our audience is a drink. I got the hand signal on that. Well, you studied accounting for a while. I kind of can't imagine Bob Hoskins as
what
an accountant.
What a mistake.
What possessed you to think that you could be an accountant?
Well, it sounded like, you know, it was about time I started doing something, being responsible. And this sort of, one Monday morning, I remember all these certificates came through the door saying I was halfway there. I said, I'm halfway to being everybody I hate. And I went into the boss's office, said, "Here, you pay for these, you can have them." And I left, and I got a boat to Europe. And I just hitched.
Huh. Bummed around?
Bummed around, and so that's what people did in those days. Right. I was going to get to India, but I got to the Arab countries.
You worked on a kibbutz in Israel for a while.
Yeah, for 6 months. I went back there. It was the Jerusalem film. I can't remember what the film was. It wasn't 24/7. But anyway, I went back there to the Jerusalem Film Festival. And they arranged a trip for me to go back to the kibbutz where I was working. And Edna Capon, who was, like, when you go there, they give you a mother, you know, to be. And there was Edna.
Wow. And still at the kibbutz?
Yeah. Hey, little Bob. Hey, little Bob.
Did you ever take acting lessons or study with somebody or
look at
videotapes or something?
No. Well, when I started, they said, you know, you've got to take elocution lessons, deportment classes, you got to learn to fence, you got to be, you know, I said, wait a minute. Hang on. I'm going to learn to talk like I don't, be like I'm not, walk like I don't. Where am I in the middle of this? And so I didn't take any lessons at all. But I learned to act by watching women.
Watching women act or watching women?
No, just watching women.
How so?
Well, it's sort of, the extraordinary thing is men, drama is about private moments. Drama is about things that you don't see. Drama is about things that people don't show. This is why people are employed to show them. It's a kind of catharsis. It's a kind of, you know, a healing process. And men can't express themselves emotionally. Women can. I suppose it's because they've had to keep their mouth shut for thousands of years. You know what I mean? But women express themselves. You walk into a champagne dinner, right? And it's all laid out, and there's the lady. She's got a big smile on her face, but you know she's pissed. You know what I mean? There's no doubt. You know. As soon as you walk in that room, but a guy. 3 weeks later, he said, "What's the matter with you?" Well, you did that. Well, why didn't you tell me? You know, why didn't you show me? And also, I suppose it comes from, it's got nothing to do with femininity either. It's just being able to express and not being afraid to express how they feel. You know, women live by feelings.
But what you're saying is that it's what, through body language, it's through words, it's through...
It's through honesty. Basically, Men can't be that honest. They sort of they have
too
these,
much at stake.
Yeah, but I think so. I don't know what it is. You get guys sort of standing in a pub talking about, you know, oh, I was this and I so, wait a minute, I don't feel like that. That's not a nod to you, really. What is this? You know?
We'll talk more with actor Bob Hoskins after a short break. This is Fresh Air. Let's continue our interview with actor Bob Hoskins. His films include Mona Lisa, The Long Good Friday, and 24/7. I asked him about acting with the animated characters in his 1988 film, Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
The thing about acting with cartoons is you got to be able to bounce off the walls the same as the cartoons. Right. And well, I suppose, you know, acrobatics and all that came into it. But the main thing was to sort of hallucinate. I had to learn to hallucinate without the benefit of drugs or booze or stuff, just do the business.
How do you do that?
Well, I realised that like my daughter, she was Rosa, she was 3 at the time, and she had an invisible friend called Jeffrey. And I was often accused of sitting on Jeffrey. And I spent hours and hours playing with her. Because our imagination, when we're born, is right at the front of our head. And kids can actually take it out and look at it. As we get older, it goes further and further back. And as we get really old, it comes back again. You see an old person mm-hmm. sitting there, they're talking to mm-hmm. their imagination.
Right.
And I played with Rosa until it happened. But then I couldn't get rid of it. At the end, I had weasels coming out of all sorts of places. And even Rosie said, Dad, you've gone too far.
Even you know, your little daughter was
you're
going
crazy. I go, my dad's crazy. But the funny thing with that, though, I must tell you, was Jack. That Roger Rabbit was the first time I ever made a film that my kids could see. You know? And I proudly sort of took my kids. And Jack was 3 when he saw it. And he came out and he wouldn't talk to me. He wouldn't have anything to do with me. And I, Jack, you know, what's the matter? It took me 2 weeks to get it out of him. And he reckoned that any father that had friends like Yosemite Sam and Daffy Duck and Bugs Bunny and didn't bring him home to meet his son was an arsehole. He wouldn't talk to me.
Well, Robert Zemeckis, who's the director, is quoted as saying that he chose you to play in this film because he essentially saw you as a cartoon.
Yeah.
I mean, that there was something about you that exuded cartoon. Was that insulting or
no, you
inspiring?
Joking. Some of my best friends are cartoons. What are you saying? No. I've always loved cartoons. I suppose there is something cartoonic about me.
Yeah.
Well, it's what keeps me in work. It's my shape. Now, plastic surgery is the biggest benefit I've ever known. Like you go to Hollywood and there's all these actors and they all go to the same surgeon and I'm sure this surgeon designed Action Man. You know what I mean, because they all look like Action Man. And then you get a director who's sort of cast in a film and there's all these action men. They all look exactly the same. And then this little short, short, fat, airy sort of middle-aged man with a bald head walks in. He says, yeah, who's that? Well, it's only me and Danny DeVito, let's face it.
That's right. With Roger Rabbit, though, you talked about having to conjure up all these images, these cartoons, with your imagination. But you were also working with puppets. I mean, I assume that there were things that the director was doing to try to make this real. I also read that there was something like 15 to 45 takes per scene in order to get all the movements right, all the reactions
well, before,
right.
Well, it had never been done before, not like that.
Right.
And every single shot had to be discussed by about 30 people.
Mm. Is that frustrating as an actor?
No, it was incredible. I was one of that 30.
Right, right.
You know.
And taking apart, I guess, what, every move?
Yeah, well, at lots of points there were people under the stage putting my feet in exactly the right position or had their hands up my back moving me in exactly the right position. Oh, I'd gone wrong.
Wow.
It would cost the company fortunes because that wasn't computers, this was paint.
So you had to literally have yourself in exactly the right position.
Oh, yeah.
Did that inhibit you as an actor at all, to be so conscious of sort of where you were supposed to be?
I don't know. I wasn't conscious. I can't remember acting. I remember just sort of doing it, right, three steps that way, two steps that way, and talk to the rabbit there.
You know. A lot of bruises from this film?
Oh, I was covered.
Really?
Well, at the end of it, what with weasels coming out of the wall, Linda took me off to Antigua in the Caribbean. And I'm sitting on the beach and she said, "Babe, you're going to have to put a shirt on. You're covered in bruises. Everybody here thinks I beat you up."
You were.
Yeah, I was literally covered in bruises. So there I am, sitting in the sun in a shirt. And I had to put socks on because the dip at the end dyed my feet bright green. So I had bright green feet covered in bruises. You know, I looked a real sight on that beach, I'll tell you.
Oh, that's great. Well, I was watching Mona Lisa, which is a wonderful film, and you give a wonderful performance. And I wonder if that's one of your favorite films. Or was it an important film for you to do? I know you got an Oscar nomination.
It was. See, the point is, my experience is making it. I had a great time making it.
Right.
The thing is, what sort of I remember of making Mona Lisa... And films like that, you suddenly get yourself into the middle of so much pain and so much sort of inner violence that at the time you think, I'm never going to get out of this alive, you know? And then, all right, you think, I'm doing myself serious damage here. But then you actually get out and you've done the reverse. You've actually, you know, healed yourself. It's like a cleansing process. Mm-hmm. But my memory is the pain.
And the pain that comes out of the certainly the pain of this character, but also the violence, because we see that even in 24/7, there's an extremely violent scene there, and watching you, I won't give too much away, but literally beating somebody, it's scary to watch. Is it scary to do?
Well, that one particularly was it couldn't be heroic. It had to be ugly. It had to make the audience feel uncomfortable. And we tried to choreograph it, and it looked like something out of John Wayne.
Oh.
And so Bruce, who plays the father, is in fact a very nice man.
And this is in 24/7.
Yeah. And he said, "Bob, we're just going to have to do it." I said, "Bruce, you know, you forget it. We're going to get hurt." He said,
"You mean you're going to have to hit me?
We're going to have to do it." And we did. We spent all afternoon doing it. And at the end of the afternoon, I had a broken hand. He had a broken hand. He had a fractured collarbone and two cracked ribs. And I took him to the hospital, and we both got patched up. And then we went to the pub and drank until it was painless.
So what we're seeing, and I'm looking at you with this shock on my face, what we're seeing then in the film is you beating this
guy. It's the real thing.
It's the real thing.
Yeah.
But so, as an actor, though, how do you get yourself into character so that you're not play acting this? You're really hitting somebody. How do you make?
Well, I don't know.
You have to go someplace else.
I can't explain acting.
Right. When you see that scene, though, what's the impact when you see that?
Well, it makes you feel sick.
Right.
Hopefully.
Right.
We didn't want to make it attractive.
Right. But as you see it and you know what you're doing, do you wince and grimace and kind of?
Yes, I did. Yes.
Actor Bob Hoskins, he recently appeared in Cousin Bet and 24/7. His upcoming film is The Live Virgin.